It's Tom Morrison sitting down with Frank Turner. So Frank, how's the Canadian tour been so far?
It's been great. I mean, basically the whole sort of motivation for me being here this time around is that, like a lot of other international bands, I've been guilty in the past of treating the Canadian dates as a bit of a kind of a, just a sort of dogleg off the American shows. You know, you sort of, you know, you go up to Seattle and then you do Vancouver to Winnipeg and then you're down in Minnesota again or something like that, you know. And despite having done that, we've always had a really good time in Canada, and I've always wanted to kind of go to more than just the cities we've been to every time, you know. So I was talking to my booking agent about it, and we came up with this idea of doing a Canadian tour. And so started in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which I'd never been to before. We're heading for Vancouver, and then I'm picking up the band in Vancouver and then going back to Montreal doing full band shows. But yeah, so today we're in Canmore. I will fess up to not really having heard of Canmore before it appeared on the tour schedule, but I've been walking around today. I've been doing some reading. I've been trying to educate myself about the history of Canmore, and I know a little bit about the place now. So, yeah, and about the trains going through and the Canmore bunnies. I know all about the Canmore bunnies, and believe me, I'll be talking about this at the show.
Oh, great. It's one of the cutest problems going on. How was the writing process for your new album, Positive Songs for Negative People?
Well, I mean, I don't really have like a writing technique or anything, or sort of like a process the same every time. It's just songs just kind of arrive, and I feel like I'm fishing quite a lot of the time, you know? And you get an idea that comes along, and then you have to work hard and to make that idea into a song. It's not like you just kind of pop these fully formed ideas out onto the page, but you know, you have to just wait for ideas to come along to start a song. But basically the previous record, Tape Deck Heart, was a record about collapse and about failure and about this kind of a breakup record, you know, and it's sort of an unhappy record, right? Let's put it that way. And I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that there's still quite a lot of kind of darkness on the new record, but this is my version of a happy record. You know, this is as upbeat as I'm ever going to be on an album. But so it's a record that's about kind of crawling out from under, do you know what I mean, about kind of standing up after the bike accident and kind of straightening out the handlebars and getting back on the bike again.
Good. And Islington's a place.
Islington's a place in North London. Okay. And the thing about that is I live in a place called Holloway in London, which incidentally is the best part of London. Just throwing just getting that on the record here. Here in Alberta. But if you were to there's somebody I know who lives in East London and I live in North London, and if you were to set out on foot from both of our houses at the same time, you would meet at a place called the Angel Islington, which is, you know, poetic enough in itself.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
All right, cool. Now, I've always wondered, been like, I don't know what that is, but now I know.
Well, should you ever, have you ever been to London?
I've never been overseas.
Right. Well, if you ever get the opportunity, I mean, I would say this, but I genuinely, having been around the world, I'm still pretty convinced that London's one of, if not the greatest city in the world. It's a fascinatingly amazing place.
Good.
Come visit.
I'll write it down. I have to do it. So how do you like these acoustic shows? And you've played massive, massive festivals.
Yeah. Well,
and
we
sold out like the O2 Arena. How is it coming to these little acoustic shows?
The thing about it is like, while I have done some big shows in my career, I've done an awful lot more small shows. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to disavow the big shows. It's amazing playing headlining an arena and selling it out and then walking out on stage and just kind of going, yeah, this is cool. But, you know, I cut my teeth and I learn my chops in smaller rooms. And, you know, I mean, it's not, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's no level on which I'm kind of like, I'm not like stooping to do smaller shows or whatever. I love it. It's great. I feel very comfortable doing it. It feels like I'm in the place where I belong, you know? And in a way, I hope I never lose that sense of when I'm in a bigger room of feeling slightly like an imposter in it, because, you know, I like that kind of underdog vibe. It's a good mentality to have, I think. But yeah, so tonight, you know, playing in a, I mean, I've not actually been to the venue yet, but you know, it's a bar, mm-hmm. pub, as far as I'm aware. We've got 200 people coming tonight.
Right.
It should be rammed out. We're sold out, which is very exciting. And it's going to be very, I mean, one of the things I always say is the first London show I ever played as a soloist. I was in various other bands before. First London show I played as a solo artist, three people came to the gig.
Nice.
And they were all on my guest list. Now tonight, there's 200 people coming, and there's only one person on my guest list, as far as I'm aware, or at least that I know of. So by that arithmetic, Canmore is considerably cooler than London.
So
I'm excited about the show.
It sold out in days. And how did that feel?
Yeah, great. I mean, it is a never-ending source of wonder to me that people in towns I've never been to know who I am or what I do. And I mean, I think, you know, I always try and approach it with from the point of view of, if I've not played somewhere before, then I'm owed nothing, I'm due, I can expect nothing, you know, and you just have to start from the bottom and work up. Because that's kind of what I've done with my career. I mean, I guess, you know, obviously I've played in Alberta before, in Calgary and Edmonton a lot, you know, and I'd imagine that quite a few people at the show tonight will be from Calgary and or Edmonton. But you know, with those shows, I came through first time with Gaslight Anthem back in 2009,
right,
and was the first on, and I don't think anyone knew who I was. And it's a point of pride for me that, like, the audience that I have, I feel like I've earned, you know. But it's, I mean, it's amazing. Here we are. We're in Camel for the first time in my life, and
absolutely,
there's all these people coming to the show. I hope they enjoy it.
Oh, can guarantee they will. My next question. Mm-hmm. Northcote's opening for you, and I know it's important to see the opening act for you.
Yes.
And how did you get involved with him?
Well, he and I, we've played together a few times over the years. We sort of move in similar musical and social circles, you know. Like, there's a whole thing around Chuck Reagan, mm-hmm, the Revival Tour. You know, Chuck's such a fantastic guy, because he's not only has he kind of musically been a pioneer in terms of this kind of, like, folk and country influence on the punk scene, but he's just a very wonderful, warm guy who brings a lot of people together. And a lot of musicians that I know that I've collaborated with, I've met kind of through his sort of sphere, you know what I mean? So me and Matt, we played together years ago, a couple of times here and there. He's working with Extra Mile right now, which is the record label that I'm with in the UK, and he's a good dude. And you know, these dates coming up, I wanted to tour with some Canadians. We've got Mo Kenny joining on the tour as well, mm-hmm, once the full band are in from Vancouver, so that's exciting too. I've not met her yet, but her music's amazing. I always, it's a point of pride to me to pick my support acts. I think it's really important for me to, first of all, sell tickets to a whole evening's worth of entertainment that's worth seeing. Do you know what I mean? I don't want people,
absolutely,
to have to suffer through a bunch of rubbish bands who've bought on, or the record label have pushed them on or something. But also, you know, that's the way the world works. I got where I am because other bands took me on tour, you know, and gave me a chance to impress their audiences. And now I'm repaying the favor and handing the torch on, almost. Do you know what I mean? And in 5 years' time or whatever, Mo and Matt are going to come through and do their own show, and there's going to be somebody else opening for them, and the cycle will continue.
Right. So while you're writing, who are your main inspirations musically?
Well, it changes. I mean, there are certain kind of, like, sort of backstops. Do you know what I mean? I always think of the first few Weezer records as being a really good example of, like, the importance of simplicity. And I think a lot about Springsteen in terms of everything, really. And I think a lot about John K. Samson from The Weakerthans, who's, like, one of my favorite songwriters in terms of his
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg guy, yeah. And I mean, John writes with such kind of breadth and intelligence and sensitivity, and I find that very inspiring. But beyond that, I mean, it slightly depends on what I'm listening to at the moment and what's inspiring me at any given time. I mean, right now I've just about crawled out of a massive Elvis phase, which I'm not, like, disavowing in any way. Elvis was the king. He just was. I've been listening to a lot of Nick Cave, actually. I mean, obviously, I've known Nick Cave's stuff for years, but I'm having a bit of a Nick Cave revival in my life right now. It depends, really.
So during the music video of Mittens...
there we go, busted. The direct inspiration for that video, in the sort of short term as it were, was that my production manager Dougie is a big Elvis fan, and it was his birthday and we were on tour, and we bought him an Elvis outfit for his birthday. We sort of threw a little party for his birthday, and we bought him an Elvis outfit, and it was the coolest thing ever. And, like, there's something really empowering about putting on an Elvis jumpsuit. It makes you feel strong. But, you know, it's the Mittens video has been an interesting one. You know, it's a video, it's sort of much more of an art piece than any video I've really done before, you know. Well, certainly more obviously one. And it's been quite kind of divisive. Some people seem to really hate that video. But I like that in a way, because, you know, aren't supposed to provoke a reaction. And it's been kind of cool to see people kind of, like, going, like, what the hell is this? What the hell is this? What the hell is this? The other thing about it is that my wonderful girlfriend who plays the female lead in the video, and it's a one-shot video, but we did it six times, so she had to hit me in the face six times. And that's kind of like, I feel like that's got me six kind of, six in the bank, do you know what I mean? Six misdemeanors.
Something to bring up later, for sure.
Well, you've already hit me in the face.
Yeah, six times. That's a really great song, tremendous video.
Thank you.
And so what, your old band, Million Dead.
Yeah.
How did that all not happen anymore?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Million Dead, you know, we were young and we were angry and we were hungry and all the things that you should be when you're in a punk band. And we toured together a lot. And I think one of the things about Million Dead is, in a way, the thing that made us good is also the reason we broke up, in the sense that we were all very disparate characters, and we were never really, with the exception of me and Ben, the drummer, because we grew up together, but in terms of the rest of the band, we were never really friends. We were musical associates. We all came from very different musical backgrounds and had very different ideas about what the band should sound like. And in those brief moments where we managed to kind of reach some kind of balance between all of us, I think we made a sound that was kind of original and interesting and cool, and had a lot of tension and an interest to it. But of course, the problem is that over time, you know, particularly when you're touring, you've got no money, you're in a van, you're playing no people, driving around Europe kind of thing. It just kind of, we just sort of, I mean, it's funny, yeah, like I say, at one point in time I would have described it by saying we forgot how to be friends with each other, but part of me suspects that we never really were friends. We were musical associates first. And when the music stopped grabbing us all, it just kind of, the wheels fell off. And it's a shame, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, one of the things I always think about is like, there is somewhere a demo of a batch of new material that we were working on when we broke up, which doesn't have any vocals, because personally, I just felt really uninspired by it. And I felt like we'd reached the end of our road as a band. So as much as at the time I was very gutted by it, looking back, it's like, that wasn't meant to go on any longer than it did.
You're obviously happy it happened too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I learned an awful lot from being in that band. I'm very proud of everything we did. And, you know, I have huge respect for the guys I was in the band with, even if, guys and girl, even if I don't see many of them anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you find yourself into the more folk side? Because Million Dead is like screaming, very loud in your face. Obviously, some of your songs are still loud and in your face, but you can pick up an acoustic guitar and go.
Well, there was a lot of different reasons. I mean, part of it was that I'd started listening to a lot of stuff like Johnny Cash, American Recording, Springsteen, Nebraska, all of which was new to me, like early Dylan. Because I grew up with metal and punk, you know, so it was new territory for me. And it was interesting to me, you know, you get that thing when you're excited when you sort of discover a new genre. Do you know what I mean? It was like suddenly I was like, oh my God, Ryan Adams, oh my God, Merle Haggard, you know, and Neil Young was a revelation to me. And, you know, my musical education was kind of upside down in that sense, but that's how it was. So it was that kind of thing. But also, you know, I knew I needed to do something different because I felt like I'd sort of run my own course in the sort of punk, hardcore, post-hardcore, whatever you want to call it, world. But also a big part of it was just that it was something I'd never done before and didn't know how to do. And I thought that it was, you know, I think sort of self-applied shock therapy is not a bad thing if you're trying to be an artist, you know what I mean? Throwing yourself in the deep end of something you don't know how to do. And it's sort of sink or swim, you know? And also it just felt kind of punk. There was something about Million Dead got so complicated towards the end. You know, the songs were all really musically complicated and the lyrics were super obtuse and super weird. And to go from that to playing like three chords and just singing a direct story about something that happened last weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that almost felt like there was something punk about that simplicity and that directness. Because the thing is, it's either a good song or it's not in that case. Like, that's what the example I always think of, and I do like this band, but it's kind of difficult to judge whether or not a Dillinger Escape Plan song is good or bad because it's just a Dillinger Escape Plan song. You know, it's 4,000 miles an hour, it's in 13 time, it's in chromatic scales going completely bonkers, and it just kind of is what it is. You know, whereas with a Weezer song, like, it's three chords, four chords, it's a straight drum beat, and it's a set of lyrics that you can hear, and it's either a good song or it's a bad song, and there ain't nothing you can hide behind, you know? And something about that seemed really kind of like appealing to me in a kind of punk kind of way. You know, it was like, I'm going to play the simplest music that I can and hope that it's good.
Yeah. And it was. Like, it's honestly fantastic.
Thank you,
gets
thank
me through
you.
A lot of days. Sorry to keep kissing up to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so I've been looking at your left hand a lot. You're known for having all kinds of tattoos on your body. Just your left hand. I want you to hold it up. Other way. Yeah, there we go.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay, can you explain the meaning behind those tattoos, or if there's a meaning? Or
yeah, well, I mean, quite a few of them, actually, I'm going to have to hold up my right hand as well.
Okay, cool.
So on the backs of my hands, I have a fox and a crow, which is, they were drawn for me by my friend Keenan. The designs, it's kind of a woodcut thing. First of all, it's Aesop's Fable of the Fox and the Crow, but also there's a band called Me Without You, have a song called The Fox, the Crow and the Cookie, and at a moment in time when I was kind of feeling like I'd run out of ideas about music generally, I heard that song and it completely re-inspired me to get stuck back in. I mean, the album Didn't Keep My Bones wouldn't have happened without that
awesome
record, do you know what I mean? So that was a big thing. I have Freeborn on my knuckles, which is a reference to a guy called John Lilburn, who was a English radical from the 1600s who fought for equality before the law, one person, one vote, all these kind of ideas. But he was just kind of a cantankerous so-and-so, wouldn't it? Just yeah, he fought hard and stood up for himself and for ideas of liberty, which I like. And then I have 81 on here, which is the year I was born. I have 13 over here, lucky 13. And 1381 was the year of the Peasants' Revolt, which is my favourite revolt in British history. I've got the drama masks on my fingers as well. And then I have an Alpha and an Omega, which is, you know, a sort of classical reference to the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could talk forever about my tattoos, you know, in a way that may or may not be interesting.
Do you know the amount on your body?
No, that's, I've lost, I could count, but like, I stopped. You know, who cares?
Yeah, true. Okay, I'm almost done here. And you're involved with War Child.
Yeah.
And can you tell me what's going on there with you and them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a new thing for me. I kind of... I try to do my bit for charitable stuff like everybody does, you know. Right. I mean, the form it takes for me is usually a bit more public than some other people. But anyway, I you know, I did a lot of stuff for an organization called Shelter, who do homeless stuff and look after homeless people in the UK. I've done a lot of stuff for the Love Hope Strength Foundation. I sort of try and pick one to concentrate on for a period of time, you know. The Love Hope Strength Foundation, who do bone marrow donation stuff. And then as of the other day, I'm kind of now trying to do stuff with War Child. War Child are... I'm not sure if they have a Canadian branch, I'll be honest with you, but there's That's a okay. UK organization that I've been working with, and they do, they're essentially looking after children in conflict zones, and that what they do is kind of really simple. They just kind of go and they get people out of conflict zones, they try and reunite them with their family, they try and make sure they're getting some kind of education, they're getting fed and they're getting clothed and they're getting vaccinated, you know. And what's kind of amazing is that there needs to be a charity to do all this stuff, you
yeah.
know. And They're growing a lot. The guys who run the charity are amazing, driven, wonderful people who do wonderful things. And yeah, I've just started with it, but I'm hoping to kind of like do more and maybe even like get out some conflict zones. So it's a humbling thing to be part of.
That's an incredible thing that you're working with there. And okay, my last question, honestly, maybe. what drives you to go on stage every time, and what inspires you on these long grueling tours, especially when you're driving across Canada? But you flew out of Thunder Bay too, right?
Yeah, we did. We did a bit of flying, so we cheated a little bit in the middle there.
That's perfectly acceptable.
I think that, you know, okay. So the last, hold on, let me phrase this right.
Go for it.
Like most people in the band, you go through this weird sort of half-light period of time, like you're at school or university or whatever at the beginning, and you're just kind of playing on the weekends. Then you have this weird period of time before you kind of manage to make enough money from music to go to live as a full-time musician, where you've kind of got these terrible jobs that you have because they enable you to, you're allowed to come and go on tour and stuff, and whether it's bar work with your friends or whatever. And every musician, every creative person, I think, goes through that sort of like demi-mond period between part-time and full-time, and it's not easy, but you have to go through it. But the last kind of full-time work that I did before I was able to make a full-time living out of music, and this is quite a long time ago now, but I worked in a warehouse in North London in a call center, and I had like an earpiece, you know, and I had to dial through numbers all day every day trying to sell stuff, cold calling over the phone. And the worst part was I was selling phones over the phone, which, as you can imagine, doesn't really work.
A little bit of irony there.
Yeah, you know, hi, can I interest you? Oh, you've already got one. Okay, don't worry about it. You know, it's yeah. ridiculous. Anyway, so I did that job. And the thing is, not only did I do that job, but a lot of the other people doing that job were also musicians, because the thing was, they didn't care at all. You could work for 2.5 weeks, go off on tour for a month, come back, and they just rehire you straight away. So there's a lot of music people who work in there. And I don't directly know of anybody else who was there when I was there who is now making a full-time living. So the thing that I do whenever I'm at any point in my life thinking about having a prima donna moment, I try and remind myself, first of all, of how much that job sucked, because right. it really sucked and I hated it. And secondly, I try and remind myself of the other people who are doing that, who, I'm not saying they're all still working in a call center, I doubt they are at all, but like, you know, I've been really fortunate. And obviously there are three contributing factors to a successful music career. There's talent, there's hard work, and there's luck. And you know, you shouldn't belittle the last one of those things. I've been very fortunate. I've been very lucky in my music career, you know, and I have friends who are equally as talented and hardworking as me who haven't been. And, you know, almost sort of on their behalf, like, I feel like I shouldn't complain about what I have and I should do the best I can with it, you know. So, and I mean, I'm not saying that I always succeed in stopping my prima donna moments. I'm sure I can be terrible. from time to time. I'm partly saying this like this because I know my tour manager sat outside of that door and is currently rolling her eyes at everything I'm saying. But you know, I try and remember that stuff, and you know, it's a blessing. Like, I get to travel the world and play music, you know, and I've never been to Cameron before, and we got here today, and I stood there and I looked at the mountains and just thought, man, this is beautiful. It it's amazing. Takes you away. Yeah, you know, and I'm here because I play the guitar. It's like, I do it for free. You know, it's like, don't tell my manager. You know, so it's a wonderful thing. And I think if you bear that kind of stuff in mind, then you can keep your feet on the ground.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Frank, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you...
Wonderful to be in Canada.
Oh, I'm glad you've enjoyed it. I'm glad the mountains have satisfied you. And that is your Rocky Mountain Insider for today.